Hello everybody and welcome back to another episode of Preach What You Practice with me, Josh Green. We're all about preaching what we live and getting our walk to talk. This is episode 2 of Leadership L's with me and my friend Dan Randall, who is an amazing guy. Give this video a like, comment below, subscribe and click the bell for notifications of when I drop content, which is every Tuesday at 3 o'clock, so make sure you're ready. If you're listening to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, make sure you subscribe and keep checking out episodes. Follow me on Instagram, it's at @joshsosocial. You can see all the different content that I post on there. And also, if you could support me on Patreon, that would absolutely be a wonderful thing that you could do for me. It helps me to get these podcasts out. You can get an early look at my book, which I'm writing, Preach What You Practice, which is dropping this year. You can get exclusive content just for Patreon members, just exclusive videos that I record just for the people who support me. You can go from like £3 a month all the way up to like £25 a month with all sorts of different rewards. So make sure you check that out, Preach What You Practice, on patreon.com. It's patreon.com/preachwhatyoupractice. You can find everything on there. And I'd love it if you could support me. But right now, I'm going to be chatting to Dan Randall all about Leadership L's, how to take your losses, turn them into lessons. Let's go. All right, everybody. Well, welcome to Leadership L's. I've got my good friend, Dan Randall. We went to a 1975 concert together. He is actually a good friend. It's not just like one of those where it's like... So, Dan, welcome to the podcast. Tell us a bit about you and what you do day to day.
Yeah, it's good to be here. That was a great night of 1975, pre-corona and all that. So as Josh said, my name's Dan. I help lead something called Hope Together, which helps churches of all shapes, sizes, cultures, backgrounds think about how do we reach people for Jesus? How do we make people make Jesus known, not make people known? In words and action, and also help lead a great local church called Life Church Lancashire, which is cool and a lot of fun. Your life is good.
It is a good church. I like it. They've got one of those cool buildings that you walk in and you're like, yes, I love this. And you recently got married too?
Yes, recently got married. Marina is my amazing wife. We live in Burnley, the home of football.
The home of football, said no one ever.
Said 40,000 angry Burnley fans. No, great. And life is good as a Burnley fan. We're good.
Amazing. Well, before we get fully into it, I'm going to ask you a bit more of a light-hearted question. Talking about music, if you can, give us your favourite song of all time.
My favourite song of all time? Wow. Put you on. I thought what you were going to ask me was, what is your favourite Social Beans song? But that one that goes, drama!
It's a good song.
Yeah, my favourite song of all time. That is a tough question. Yes. Probably, well, my favourite band of all time is Nirvana, so it's probably going to have to be one of their songs. But then that is also hard.
That is hard.
Yeah, that is
hard. I only know one Nirvana song, so that's pretty criminal.
Oh, my days. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? The Man Who Sold the World. That song. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to check it out now because I only know one song and you probably know what song that is. Because I am
Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Because I am cliche music guy.
You are a cliche music guy, but that's all right.
Actually, I do have one more question because I asked Pete this because he's a Liverpool fan, which I found out recently to my disgust and nearly cancelled his podcast episode. who do you think is going to win the Premier League?
Whew, that is a tough question. I think it's a really interesting season. I think it's up for grabs. You know, you guys are City, Liverpool are in there. You know, Leicester are doing some stuff. Tottenham are doing some stuff. You know, I think it's up for grabs. Who would I like to win the league? I would like a bit of change. So, like, looking at who's kind of up there and jostling right now, I would say Tottenham. Not because I have any affiliation to them. And I'm not going to say something ridiculous like Burnley to win the league. Our ambition, our goal is 17th every season.
Oh, man. Amazing. Well, we've got a bit of a deeper sort of transition right now into the topic. So
leadership lessons. How do we turn our losses into lessons? Dan is a great leader. He doesn't fail a lot, so this might be difficult to try and get some of these ones through. But yeah, I asked Pete this question. How do you turn your L's, your losses into lessons? How do you make something? How do you allow sort of failure to make you rather than break you?
Yeah, I would say for me, it starts with awareness. So, you know, the more aware you can make yourself, spiritually aware, you know, growing in what some people would call this ancient Jewish word, kavana, your awareness of the presence and purpose of God. I love that word. Oh, but then your awareness of things like your emotional intelligence, your well-being, things. The more aware you are as a person, the more then I think secure you can be and proactive you can be in seeking feedback. I'm someone who's passionate about seeking feedback in anything that I do. And the reality is when I go into a lot of that feedback, I've already thought through stuff of like what worked, what didn't, but also kind of what did I bomb out in, like what did I fail in my leadership in that area? What did I kind of get wrong? Mm-hmm. And so for me, it starts with awareness. On a commitment with, I guess, a kind of a great council of reference, council of friends, people who are journeying with you really helps. But then going, okay, we just keep having a go. You know, someone that I know, one of his favorite phrases, that Australian phrase, have a go, you mug, but just keep having a go. Keep having a go at this. So I think for me, it's about an attitude of knowing where you've got it wrong, and then having people around you to point it out if you've missed it, but then also actually going, how do I then turn it around? And I think when you have a personal culture of seeking feedback, wanting to grow, then every loss turns into a lesson, because you don't allow yourself to get in a pity pit, become bitter, you know, any of those things, because of the people around you and the attitude that you go into it with. It's almost like that knowledge that you're going to mess up, you know, not mess up's the wrong word. That's kind of linked to some other things, isn't it? But like you're going to fail at points in your leadership.
Yeah. It's like a little bit like that phrase where it says, I've never failed before. I've just learned 1,000 ways not to do it. It's a bit cheesy, but you know, the sentiment is true that you're going into something, not necessarily with the success or failure mindset, but actually, how am I going to learn and how am I going to grow from this experience? And so you adopt that sort of humble position of a leader is a learner.
Mm.
So I'm going to learn from this situation. And it's just a completely different posture, isn't it, when you're sort of leading? So I'm working from this premise in this little series of the podcast we're doing on leadership, that leaders are learners. And just wondering for you personally, maybe just practically, how do you make sure that you stay a learner? So we've talked about awareness and your emotional intelligence, which is all super important. And it's okay if you don't have anything outside of that, because that's really good and foundational. But is there any sort of practical ways that you sort of keep yourself, you know, a disciple as a disciplined learner, how you keep yourself as a learner?
Yeah, yeah. For me, a book that I once read was called The One Thing by Gary Keller, which really did change kind of some of my outlook on life. He's a Christian, but it's not a Christian book, you know. But it's a great book. And so for me, it showed in the book these seven areas of life. And it talked about some lies in life as well. Like there's no such thing as living, like it's really hard to have a disciplined life. The key is build habits, use your discipline to build habits. And so for me, I looked at these seven areas of life, spiritual, emotional, mental, key relationships, different ones. He talks about physical and just go, okay, what is my one thing in each of these areas right now? What is the one thing I'm growing in? You know, and then whatever you believe about habits, then actually, you know, whether you believe it takes 30 days or 60 days, then, you know, you could build six great habits in each area of your life every year. And so then, you know, a commitment to grow and that's maybe how my mind works. So maybe not that helpful for some people, like, well, I'm not that proactive in growing. So I guess probably a simpler way of looking at it would be, who is around me and how am I learning from them? You know, who am I listening to? Who's inspiring me? Who's inputting into me? You know, people have probably heard this, but this idea of, oh, such and such leader mentors me. But in reality, what they mean is they read their books, and in a good sense, like they've never met Brian Houston, or they've never met Stephen Furtick, and they've met Andy Stanley, and they've met Craig Rochelle, but they are leaning in towards him, learning from those guys, and so on and so forth. And so, but then actually also looking physically, who is around you? And so a challenge for myself is always, how am I learning from those that are younger than me? Because naturally, our disposition is to learn from those that are older than us. And also then sometimes learn from our peers and have that peer-to-peer kind of challenge. But I think particularly asking the question, how am I learning from those younger than me? What are the next generation telling me about culture and about actually the way they want to be led, not in a demanding sense, but also how they operate and, how I can best lead them.
Yeah, I love that. That's really cool. I love that idea of learning from people who are younger than you because, yeah, it's sort of an opposite way. But Jesus talked about that, didn't he, to learn from children and be like children. So not to be childish, but to be childlike. And like recently I was having a conversation with my younger brother. He's 5 or 6 years younger than me. And he works for a social media company. I was telling him some of the frustrations that I had, some of the visions that I had and how I was finding it really difficult. And he sort of just like pointed me in the direction of taking things in a slightly different way. And I was just like blown away with his sort of take on culture, as you say, and the landscape of our environment. And I was like, oh, that makes total sense. I don't think if I'd talked to somebody who had esteem as really wise and perhaps a lot older than me, I don't think I ever would have gleaned this bit of wisdom. Not that he's more wise or anybody's more wise than anyone else necessarily, but I don't think I would have gleaned that sort of truth, that wisdom, if I hadn't actually just broadened my perspectives, as you were saying. I really
like that. And I remember someone once said to me, just because you learn about leadership from this person or how to lead a ministry or how to lead a church from this person doesn't mean that they are also the person you should learn how to be a husband from or a parent from or, you know, and the person that you admire and learn to how to be a great husband or wife from or a great parent from or a great friend, like learn to be a great friend, support friend, whatever different types of relationships there are in your life. Actually, they're different people. And to be honest, I don't know anyone who is like, oh, I'd go to them for the whole shebang. And I think that would be dangerous because there is only one person, without being super cheesy, there is only one person we go to with the whole shebang, and that's Jesus, you know. Mm-hmm. And he is the greatest example of a leader. And same with Bookshery podcasts. None of them are infallible. None of them are supreme. They're all great and excellent in their own right. And, and how that fits in with your theology and your thinking, and there's so much great stuff out there. But in reality, the Bible is above all those. You know, the Word of God is right. So I think that's kind of how I view it in terms of, make sure your circle's big enough to pull from people. And it's different for introverts and extroverts, you know. I like to have lots of friends. That's a running joke in our house. You know, such and such is your friend. You mean you've met them twice?
I'm the same. Yeah. No, I love that. And I was reading a book recently on leadership by Chad Veach. It's called Help, I Lead People. And he talks a little bit about what you were saying, that you don't just sort of isolate one person and get the whole shebang. And even beyond that, he sort of says that leadership begins with self-leadership. How am I leading myself? And so pulling from different sources, but ultimately you yourself coming before God, being molded and shaped into the person that God wants you to be. That is perhaps more important than anything that anyone could speak into your life. You know, just you yourself with the Bible. I'm going to ask something a little bit different. And this question came from my wife, who's super wise. She said, oh, you guys should talk about how do you balance being a leader and being likable? And, this is something that I've struggled with for a long time, you know, being in a band and having to do music videos and your whole sort of the way a band is set up is a normal band is set up to be sort of liked and esteemed sort of thing. But, you know, it can be dangerous to be fully focused on being likable, even just as a person, never mind as a leader. But how do you balance being a leader and being likable?
Yeah, I think not to nuance it too much, but the difference between being liked and being likable. I think, if anybody's out there done strengths finders, those kind of things, that one of the strengths that some people have is woo, this idea of winning others to you, you know, that some people just have that gift of winning people. And so naturally those people are more likable. Doesn't mean the other people aren't nice, but naturally they are more, I guess, likable. And they have that gift. I think it's important to be likable as a leader, because I think people need to be able to approach you and access you and connect with you. And otherwise, you're just not leading anyone. You know, if no one's following you, you just out for a walk on your own, John Maxwell says. And which is true.
Love that.
But I guess this idea of being liked, you know, simply I would put it as this. Don't go into leadership if you want to be liked all the time. Mm. I've heard some people say, don't go into leadership if you don't want to be liked. I think that's sometimes dangerous, because then I think that what that can lead to is not just that statement, but that kind of thinking is go down a route of I'm just going to be tyrannical, iron-fist, blah, 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 you know, because it's not about being liked. Well, yeah, we're not doing this to be liked, but if you're not liked any of the time, there's probably something wrong. Because actually, again, why would people follow someone that they don't like, full stop? Mm-hmm. Now, that night that you challenge that person, or that day that that person, you have to bring a challenge, you have to have a difficult meeting, they might not like you for a day, 2 days, a week, but they probably like you for quite a lot of the rest of it. Or you make a decision as a leadership team, and then you communicate that to a wider team. Maybe some of the people don't agree with that. They might not like you, so on and so forth. So the aim is not to be liked. We can't get into the trap of pleasing people and bend into that. Otherwise, we're in this constant stress upon ourselves. We're in a place where we're saying, actually, you know, I'm living for people, not for Jesus, and not for actually where he's called me and the vision. And because the vision is about more people than just these few that I'm leading here, and so on and so forth. But again, it's not about swinging that other way and just, you know, wielding this big iron fist and doing what we want, because it's not about being liked. So I think being liked is not the goal. If we're not naturally woo and likable people in that sense, then that's something we have to work on. But then actually, yeah, I think it's so important that we have to lead what we're doing first and foremost with integrity, with openness, you know, and then there is, you know, there is mistakes made. There has to be the openness with that. But then moving forward, and you hope that people give you the grace that you give them.
Yeah.
But being in a place where you're leading to be liked, or your decisions to be liked, I think that puts us in a very dangerous place. And we're basically pulled in all different directions. And sure, there's probably a good analogy out there for it, but you just feel like that, you know, someone carrying a million different boxes and just, you know, kind of just absolutely crash, and some sort of comical Mr. Bean sketch, just someone's carrying too much stuff. And it, yeah, just leads to a place that's not healthy. And yeah.
All right, then. So, because I really love that perspective, I hadn't sort of fully expected that answer. So Dan's hit me with the truth bomb right there. Likeable and likeable. I love that. So how do you handle them? Because you're right, you're totally right, that we're called to love people. And when you love people, people are probably going to like you and think you're a nice person, generally. Sometimes, though, as you say the right thing and people take it wrongly. But how do you...
That is love, isn't it? Yeah. That is, you know, love isn't always flowers and roses. Love is sometimes... If you don't stop doing this, your car is about to go off a cliff. You know, that, you know, metaphor for life. It's like, you know, who's going to say it to that person, you know, to help them to, you know, and they might hate you for it. But the reality is that, you know, with the car didn't go off the cliff, they didn't make that. Yeah. And so go on.
No, that's why I asked the previous question, because, you know, sometimes as a leader, you need to make that choice that seems to oppose that likable element of everything, and that sort of stereotypical societal view of love. It feels like you have to really go against the grain as a leader. So I'm going to ask you this question. I think it's a really difficult question, probably one that you only really come across if you're leading a movement, like whether that's a church or an organization or a business. And it's this sort of question of, how do you know whether to sustain something or to take a risk to grow it? Because I think at certain points in your journey as a leader, you come to a point where you sort of think you're presented with an opportunity, or there's a potential to grow something. Or if you lead in a church, it's like, we could have another campus here. And so there's all sorts of questions about finance and insurance, and do we have enough people and volunteers? And how do you know whether the decision is to say, actually, let's sustain and let's stay sort of as we are, or let's grow? You know, sometimes sustaining something, you become comfortable, and, you know, actually you should have taken the risk, but you've decided to sustain and it all becomes a bit boring and dry and lethargic. And then sometimes, on the other hand, you can make a risk, you can take a big risk, and it actually ruins a good thing that you had. And if you just sustained and stayed consistent with what you had, you would have got to a different place, a better place, perhaps. Just wondering if you had any insight on how to balance sort of sustaining something or taking a risk, and how to make a decision to do that.
Yeah, three very quick thoughts on that, I would say, is this. Number one is kind of that Kavanagh thing I mentioned before, that awareness of the presence of purpose of God. If we don't have that, if we're not rooted in our, whatever you want to call it, devotional life, walk with God, journey with God, communication with God, relationship with God, if we're not rooted in that, then I don't think we need to be led by the Holy Spirit on those things, you know, and I think we, you know when to be prompted. The second thing is, I don't know who said it, but probably someone really wise, but it's just this idea of pastors should have a Bible in one hand and a newspaper in the other, you know, which is kind of like old, you know, kind of old fashioned way of looking at it. But that idea of faith and understanding culture, you know, understanding what's going on. I think as a leader, when it comes to this kind of decision that we're referencing, it's almost like you've got to have a budget in one hand and your journal in the other. And that's not to replace the Bible, because I think budgeting is biblical as well. So kind of the Bible kind of wraps around both of those. But it's kind of like my journal representing, this is might be, you know, my dreams and things that are in that for what we're doing as a leader and the things I'd love to do, and the budget representing the reality of where we are right now, and kind of that faith and reality mixing. And I think then for me, the tension has always been, I know I swing more towards what's in my journal, and I'm like, let's do this, let's do that. You know, I'm a dreamer, I'm a visionary. That's kind of strategizing, planning around those things. But therefore, if that's me, or maybe you're more on the cautious side as a leader, so, well, then who's in your team? You know, have you got dreamers? Have you got people who are pushing the bar on some of these things? Have you got your cautious? Have you got, you know, different kinds of Edward de Bono's book, thinking about different styles of wisdom? You know, have you got all those different hats around the table? So I think actually that really helps temper some of that stuff. But as a leader, first and foremost, we've got to be kind of in that, in, you know, that we've got to know what God is saying. That's got to be the top of the bottom. As a leader, then we've got to, it's almost like the image of the budget and the journal thing is almost like everything our team gives us, and weighing that up and praying that through. And because at the end of the day, we're the ones that have got to make the final call and final decision on it, in agreement with our team and journeying with them and so on and so forth. But they're looking to us to kind of hear what everyone's saying and then go, right, this is how we move forward. And in, you know, in some settings, obviously that's a style of leadership, but I think, you know, when there's a primary leader, that has to be done at some level. So there would be the three quick things: awareness, the presence, purpose of God, that kind of what are we weighing in our hands, and who's on our team.
I love that. That's so good. Because you just met with that so many times as a leader, so many, you know, and you might be watching this podcast, you might be listening to this podcast, and you've not sort of gone into a leadership position or something like that, but you will have come across a decision like this, whether it's moving house or moving jobs or changing churches or whatever it can be. In life, we're always confronted with this sort of, is it time to rest or is it time to risk? And it's quite a difficult transition. And the reason why I ask it is because obviously after following this coronavirus pandemic, and we're sort of in the wake of that and in the midst of it, and you can see how you can sort of track how the economy is going to do. There's going to be lots of decisions where you're going to have to really navigate and be really careful about whether to sustain something or whether to take risks. And so that's why I bring it up. So thank you for your wisdom. Yeah, and I love that. I forget what the book's called now, where you wear the different hats, the one that you just referenced.
Edward de Bono's Creativity Styles. I think I've got it here.
Yeah.
So I think it's called Creativity Styles.
We actually did this in some training that I'm doing at my church, where we speak to one another with the different hats. So it was like, Josh, I want you to take this, the king hat, I think, was one, and the warrior hat was another. And it was like, I want you to take these hats. Maybe he got it slightly nuanced from something else, but it was like, I want you to speak in these voices. And it really helped me, because I'm naturally sort of the pastoral sort of kindness, the voice of love, encouragement. I find that really easy to sort of encourage someone, but I find it really hard to say. Few things I'm thinking and feeling, like the voice of caution or the voice of, I think maybe you need to change this. But it was a really good exercise to, you know, even if you don't have that team around you, actually think about those different voices. So I'd encourage people to check out that book and maybe just try and look for yourself, to speak to yourself in those different voices of, if I was to critique this vision, what would I say about it? Because naturally, as a leader, when you have an idea, you think it's the best thing in the world. You know what I mean?
I think there might be slightly different books, but I think both sound great. I guess the deeper question is, what is your pastoral voice?
Because you've never heard it.
what is the pastoral voice? And what is your voice for a warrior as well? And also, you've just encouraged all the watchers and listeners to talk to themselves in different voices. Where is an appropriate place to do this? in front of the mirror in your bathroom.
Come on,
is your pastoral voice quite soft? Is it gentle?
You know what my pastoral voice is. You're just going to wind me up on my own podcast. This is brilliant. Brilliant viewing. No, but it's true, though.
This better make the cut, this bit, because this is gold.
Make the cut. I'll leave it all in there. I'll leave it all in for the people. No, but it is true. It's true because, you know, Paul speaks about speaking the truth in love, and we have to balance those two. And that's often what I sort of struggle with, the truth aspect of sometimes maybe saying something slightly more confrontational, slightly more forward. And that's why I asked the question about leadership and being liked and all that kind of stuff, because I face that one quite a lot of, as a leader, you so oftentimes need to make those decisions that might cause a few people not to like you and to sort of be a bit opposed to your view. And you really have to get over that hurdle of what people think about you. You know, Lecrae says, if you live for people's acceptance, you die from their rejection. I think it's so true that if you live constantly about the opinions of other people, you can't fully be a leader, because a leader needs to go beyond.
True. True. I just want you to know, though, that I like you.
I like you too. And I hope, for those of you watching, you check out my friend Dan Randall. He's amazing. He does lots of amazing things. Thank you for watching today. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and I'll see you next week for another episode.
Peace out.